You're listening to an encore Mike Malloy show.
And now, from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
Hey, it's time for another podcast here. Thanks to Bob Kincaid a million times over for filling in for us while we went to visit Kathy's dad in Denver, Colorado. That was very much fun, especially the part where we drove to the top of Pike's Peak, where I kept feeling like I was going to pass out. If you've ever been up there, part of the way up, it's a very scary drive. You can take a cable car up, not a cable car, but what do they call it? A cog railroad. Cog railroad. Or you can bike up if you have the strength of 500 mountain gorillas. Or you can drive up if you have enough courage to drive 11, 12, 13, 14,000 feet up, where some of the drop-offs are straight down alongside the road and there is no guardrail. It's pretty scary. We stopped about, I guess, at the 8,000-foot mark and picked up these little canisters of oxygen, which I thought was kind of interesting. I've been to that height before, and I've camped out at 12, 14,000 feet. Usually woke up with a headache. But that was a long time ago when I was a young man. So we bought some canisters of oxygen, and they did help. What were they, about $5? Yeah, they look like little shaving cream cans. That's all, no big deal. But the views out there, the vistas are mind-boggling. Totally. Totally insane. And if you've been there before, Red Rocks, the natural amphitheater, I haven't been there in 35 years. That's pretty stunning. All in all, Colorado is a real trip. Unbelievable. Anyway, thanks to Bob Kincaid a great deal for filling in for us so we could go visit Kathy's aging father and stepmother. They are getting up there. Almost as old as I am. They have quite a few years on me. The only part of the trip that was – I'm going to get off this in a second. The only part of the trip that was weird was the flight coming back. I always like it when you're getting ready to board a plane at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and you look out over the Rocky Mountains and there's a huge, massive, evil-looking cloud formation moving your way. And we got on the plane. The pilot said, all right, we've got a little rough weather. Be a little bumpy when we start out. We got it coming from the west over the mountains. I'm sure you saw it. We also have some in the east. So it's going to be, but we'll get out of it as soon as we can. 50 minutes later, we're still white knuckling it through some pretty intense weather. Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. A couple of emails here I want to share with you. Let's see. Hey, Mike, I should have written this earlier. I hope you get this before the show is over. He was talking about last Thursday. Anyway, I'm reaching out to you for some advice. The budget proposed by Donald Covfefe Trump really troubles me. Actually, it scares the shit out of me. The fact that he wants to steal $72 billion from millions of people who benefit from Social Security and SSI disturbs me, being a blind recipient myself. As you mentioned, it is a supplemental form of income, one that I wish I did not have to depend on as much as I do. To make matters more complicated, employers don't take me seriously during the interviews because of their assumptions about my capabilities and whether or not I can do the job safely. During the last interview I had, the chef spoke to me as if I was a child, and something unusual happened. I noticed I began to sweat, and I was tempted to scream at him when he asked me what I was thinking. Why would I apply to be a dishwasher? I wanted to shout, because I want to get off SSI and put food on my fucking table that I paid for. The point is, there will be enormous consequences if Trump continues down this path. If money is taken from Social Security and people with disabilities, and there is no action taken to further enforce the Americans with Disabilities Act, people with disabilities, and there's no action taken to further enforce the People with disabilities will go hungry and become homeless, which will further reinforce the stereotypical beliefs of pity and helplessness that society has about us. People will see us on the street and pity us more than they already do. We will be the losers that this fascist hates. I don't plan to let that happen by being a bystander, but I need your advice. I hear you repeatedly talk about how desperate this country is for a mass protest, and I couldn't agree more. I want to try putting something together. How can I make this into something big that will involve a lot of people? What do you suggest I read? And speaking of reading, I'm excited to read your book once it comes out. Hang in there and keep it lit, Ryan. What do I suggest you read? Oh, boy. In terms of organizing what you have in mind, Ryan, I don't think there's anything necessarily that you should read. If you have a Facebook page, or if you use social media, since it is the tool that it is to reach God knows how many people, I would start there. Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, one of the social medias, I would imagine Facebook would be a good way to start. And try to organize it from that standpoint. I'm sure you remember, I do, the day when organizing was a lot more complicated and difficult. Not so anymore. So that's about the best I've got right now, Ryan. Okay? As far as being excited to read the book once it comes out, I'm having a very interesting time writing it. And we're still pretty much on target for November publication. I don't know how much has been sent out. I don't know what our webmaster is sending out, chunks and pieces. But we have a top-flight editor now, and she's going to make sure that when the product comes out, as they say, it'll be readable. As far as hanging in there and keeping it lit, thank you, Ryan. Back at you. Back at you. Oh, the other thing. Thanks, Ryan. The other thing about being in Denver, I mean, it was a real treat for me to walk into one of the dispensaries and buy marijuana. It was great. It was really great. And what an interesting situation when you walk into one of those dispensaries. If you've done it, you know what I'm talking about. From William in Hollywood, He writes, just in the few debates between Clinton and Trump, it was clear to me Trump was insane. He did nothing other than hold his enormous weight up, leaning over with his insane remarks aimed at Clinton. She belongs in prison, and he was smart avoiding taxes, and she was a disgusting woman. Those were his words. Clinton only brought out facts. I would rather blow my brains out than have voted for Trump. And as a result of this madman being the so-called president, thousands of people will die. He does not care about jobs or people, just his ego. William in Hollywood. Amen, William. From Matt. Hi, Kathy. Oh, this was addressed to you. Longtime listener and contributor here, going back to George W. Bush first term. Love the Mike Malloy Show. You and Mike are awesome. But he needs to stop going on and on lecturing his listeners about people on the left not voting for Hillary. It is getting really tiresome. What is the value in it? He keeps bringing it up. It's over. Nothing will change. He is just annoying his listeners. He makes it sound like his listeners who didn't vote for Hillary lost the election for her. Does he have that many listeners? Maybe he's got more listeners than I thought. Hillary was a terrible candidate. I think that was the primary reason why she lost the election. I wrote in Bernie Sanders, too. LOL. He was an official write-in candidate in my district here in California. Best regards, Matt. Mm-hmm. Well, we have a fairly... given what I do and given the nature of a podcast, I think we have a fairly substantial listener base. Pretty hard to determine, though, because unlike radio where you have rating services, I know you can get a number of web views, and there are all sorts of ways of keeping track of various aspects of social media and how many people have access to your page, your podcast, whatever. But to determine at any given moment how many people are listening, I think is pretty difficult, if not impossible. It is Wednesday night, which traditionally on this program has been church night. We've sort of gotten away from it because there's some things you just can't parody anymore. And, religion certainly has gotten to that point, in this country anyway. No, I'm not going to go on a rant about, the hypocritical Christians. I do that frequently anyway. So why do it on church night? But I do have something here that is just freaky. And it shows that it's not just Christians who are out of their goddamn minds. Here's the story. It's from India. Villagers in the northeastern Indian state of Assam beat to death two Muslim teenagers that the villagers suspected of stealing cows, which is the latest in a string of mob assaults in India about this bullshit. A police official said the teenagers had been spotted untying two cows in a pasture. When the owner shouted, "Thieves! Thieves!" a crowd of several hundred villagers gathered and began beating the youths. When the teenagers, identified as Riazuddin Ali, 18, and Abu Hanifa, 16, broke free and tried to flee, the crowd chased them for a mile and a half. That's according to a police official. Raham Ali, Mr. Ali's father, said his son was an auto rickshaw driver and had left that day to go fishing. Faisul Islam, Mr. Hanifa's father, said his son sold vegetables for a living. Mr. Islam said, quote, "He was not doing anything illegal. If he was doing anything illegal, they should have handed him over to the police. Why did they kill him? My son was innocent and the other boy was innocent." End quote. The chief of the village said neither of the teenagers had a criminal record. News footage showed the two lying in a field, surrounded by men carrying sticks and belts. Police officers arrived and took the youths to a government hospital nearby. One was dead on arrival, and the other died minutes after arriving. That's according to a police officer who took the two to the hospital. Dr. Devajit Medhi, who attended to the victims, said they had injuries to their heads, stomachs, and legs, were bleeding profusely. He said it appeared the two young boys had been beaten with blunt objects. Over the last 2 years, Muslims in India have been attacked in a series of similar episodes, often by so-called cow protection groups, who said they had caught Muslims transporting the animals legally or illegally. Hindus consider cows sacred. And they have sometimes accused Muslims of killing the animals. The police spokesman said the assailants were neither cow vigilantes nor motivated by religious concerns, but had simply believed the young men were thieves. The police spokesman said, quote, they should have caught them and handed them over to us. We would have rewarded them, the villagers. But now a crime has been committed. Police will ensure justice to the victims. Oh, bullshit. You know, Muslims in India do not have a very good time of it either. Of course, they go on rampages and kill Hindus. And then the Hindus retaliate and kill Muslims. Religion. Ain't it wonderful? I tried to imagine what that scene was like. The killing of these two kids. I don't know what they were doing with the cow. I don't think they were rustlers. Maybe they were going to cook it and eat it. I don't know. You know, Muslims eat beef, don't they? Can they? Yeah, they eat beef. But another example of the blessings of religion. You don't kill a sacred cow. Christ. A sacred cow. Yeah, no offense to Hindus, but I mean, really? Cows? I mean, I can see it maybe 1,000 years ago or 1,500 years ago or 2,000 years ago worshiping cows because, you know, yeah, they provide sustenance and I guess, I mean, you can't slaughter them if you're Hindu or I don't know what'll happen to you. Well, you get beaten to death by a bunch of your comrades. But a cow? You've seen the videos, I'm sure, of just the horrific poverty that exists still in India, in so much of that country. People literally not having the kind of nutrition necessary to thrive. And cows laying around in the street. Oh, well, it's a religion I certainly don't quite understand. I mean, I find it very interesting that they have thousands of gods and goddesses, and some of them are very fascinating, like the goddess Kalki. That's the one that just freaks me out. You know, she has lots of arms. She's depicted with lots of arms, and the hands are holding babies. And she is both nursing them at her multiplicity of breasts and also eating them, you know, biting their heads off. I guess mom gives, mom takes away, right? What do you think, Kathy?
I just send her to her room. Sometimes I make her, you know, mow the lawn.
You're talking about the goddess or Molly?
I'm talking about Molly.
Oh!
I'm just,
oh.
You know, the way I'm choosing to deal with Molly, or, you know, I nursed her, and rather than bite off her head, I figured I'd just, you know.
I wonder if that's where the expression comes from. Well, don't bite off my head.
Chew my head off.
Chew my head off, bite off my head.
Yeah, give you a piece of my mind.
All right, tomorrow's the big day. I feel like it's a combination of the Super Bowl, the World Series, and the premiere of the latest Ridley Scott movie, all rolled into one. Ex-FBI Director James Comey, bum, 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 will appear before the Senate Intelligence Committee to give his account about the events that led to his firing by the asshole. Now, what was released today, I don't know if it was released by Comey or if somebody got a copy of it, but his initial statement, part of his initial statement was glommed up by the Washington Post. And immediately it's all over the place. And Comey's prepared remarks will be the central focus of this this bullshit three-ring circus in Washington. Oh, God. This is madness, isn't it? But if any of this ever leads to the removal of the Trump-Pence roadshow, I guess it will have been worth it. Anyway, in 7 pages, Comey details his instant mistrust of Trump and his conviction from the beginning that Trump's requests were unusual, inappropriate, and a threat to the FBI's independence. That's why he, as it was reported all day long today, that when Comey had these one-on-one meetings with the orange asshole, Comey would immediately take notes or dictate or type on his laptop a memo laying out exactly what had happened in the meeting. Anyway, here's it's being called the 6 most remarkable quotes from Comey's prepared statement in the Trump investigation. Number one, the difference between Trump and Obama, according to Comey, after the first meeting on January 6th, this before Trump was sworn in, of course, Comey was worried. This is what he wrote, quote, "I felt compelled to document my first conversation with the president-elect in a memo. To ensure accuracy, I began to type it on a laptop in an FBI vehicle outside Trump Tower the moment I walked out of the meeting. Creating written records immediately after one-on-one conversations with Mr. Trump was my practice from that point forward. This had not been my practice in the past. I spoke alone with President Obama twice in person, never on the phone, once in 2015 to discuss law enforcement policy issues, and a second time, briefly, for him to say goodbye in late 2016. In neither of those circumstances did I memorialize the discussions." End quote. The second one is Trump's statement, "I need loyalty, I expect loyalty." After, or about a January 27 dinner at the White House, Comey felt pressured. This is what he wrote, quote, "The president began by asking me whether I wanted to stay on as FBI director, which I found strange because he had already told me twice in earlier conversations that he hoped I would stay, and I had assured him that I intended to. A few moments later, the president said, and I'm quoting, 'I need loyalty. I expect loyalty.'" End quote. "I didn't move, speak, or change my facial expression in any way during the awkward silence that followed. We simply looked at each other in silence." End quote. Boy, that's enough to bring your dinner back up, isn't it? Jesus Christ. Number three, Trump said, "I hope you can let this go." All right, after a February 14 Oval Office meeting, Comey and his colleagues decided they would not follow the president's wishes. Quote, The president then returned to the topic of Mike Flynn, saying he's a guy and has been through a lot. He repeated that Flynn hadn't done anything wrong on his calls with the Russians, but had misled the vice president. He then said, I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go. I replied only that, yeah, he's a good guy. After the meeting, I immediately prepared an unclassified memo of the conversation about Flynn and discussed the matter with FBI senior leadership. It was very concerning, given the FBI's role as an independent investigative agency. The FBI leadership team agreed with me that it was important not to infect the investigative team with the president's request, which we did not intend to abide. Number four. After the February 14th meeting, Comey also rebuked Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Quote, shortly afterwards, I spoke with Attorney General Sessions in person to pass along the president's concern about leaks. I took the opportunity to implore the Attorney General to prevent any future direct communication between the president and me. I told the Attorney General that what had just happened, him being asked to leave while the FBI director, who reports to the AG, remained behind, was inappropriate and should never happen. That was when Trump, there was Comey, Sessions, and somebody else, and the other two were asked to leave so that Trump could talk privately with Comey. Next, in a March 30 phone call, Trump denied an unconfirmed report that he had consorted with prostitutes during a visit to Russia. Quote, on the morning of March 30, the president called me at the FBI. He described the Russia investigation as, his words, a cloud that was impairing his ability to act on behalf of the country. He said he had nothing to do with Russia, had not been involved with hookers in Russia, and had always assumed he was being recorded when in Russia. The last one, number six. The president called me and asked what I had done about his request that I, quote, get out, end quote, that he is not personally under investigation. I said the White House counsel should contact the leadership of the Department of Justice to make the request, which was the traditional channel. He said he would do that and added, because I've been very loyal to you, very loyal, we had that thing, you know. I did not reply or ask him what he meant by that thing. That's Trump trying to talk mafia there, you know. We had that thing, you know, with the guy. You know, I told him, You know what I'm talking about?
What are you talking about?
You know, that thing, you know, with the guy. Oh, that thing. Yeah, that thing. Jesus Christ. Oh, and that little rich snot, Jared Kushner. What a little prick he is, isn't he? Huh? Isn't he just a classic example of a kid who is given every goddamn thing he could possibly want, plus never had to do anything in his life except sit around and ride his daddy's coattails, sit there and talk to the movers and shakers in Manhattan about making this deal and that deal. Kushner learned early on about the benefits of being deeply in debt with lending institutions, because then they can't do anything to you, because if they do, then they lose whatever chance they might have of recouping some of their losses. You know, when you owe $1,000 to the bank, you owe $1,000 to the bank. When you owe $100 million to the bank, you and the bank are then partners. In an explosive interview, I like these words, boom, boom, explosive. Former New York Observer editor-in-chief Elizabeth Spires said that Kushner told her that Trump never believed the so-called birther conspiracy theory, but he found it effective because, quote, Republicans are stupid and they'll buy it, end quote. This happened Sunday past. Elizabeth Spires was appearing on MSNBC's program The Point with Ari Melber to discuss Kushner's role in the White House and the increasing scrutiny he's facing over his ties to Russian officials and bankers. Christ. This is just astonishing to me. I mean, this reads like, you know, some big financier, some big honcho in real estate or something who is being investigated by the feds. And actually what we're talking about here is the president of the United States, huh? Elizabeth Spears said that Kushner was never particularly interested in journalism or its principles, but bought the New York Observer, see, the Kushner family owned it, because it was a respected news organ and, quote, he, Kushner, was drawn to the brand, end quote. That's all these people talk about is the brand, my brand, your brand. Take care of your brand. The fuck? Jesus. Other co-workers at the New York Observer have called Kushner, quote, a shithead and a know-nothing who has bought his way into everything ever with money he got from his criminal father and who is deeply insecure and obsessed with fame. I guess you know that Jared Kushner's old man went to prison for a number of years for whatever bullshit he got caught doing. Ari Melber, he's the lawyer guy on MSNBC, he brought up Kushner and Trump's embrace of birtherism, the racist conspiracy theory that, you know, Trump was born Kenya someplace and wasn't even a U.S. citizen. And Ari Melber asked Elizabeth Spires about something she'd written. Melber read from Spires' essay, quote, I told Jared I was particularly appalled by his father-in-law's birtherism stance. He rolled his eyes and said, he doesn't really believe it, Elizabeth. He just knows Republicans are stupid and they'll buy it. Melber said, he really said that to you? Spires answered, yeah, he did. Well, that's a surprise. Huh? No, Trump has, I mean, come on. He has no respect for anybody, not his family members, not the people who voted for him, not the United States, not the Constitution, nothing. He doesn't have any self-respect either. He's a fucking gangster. I mean, come on. He is a gangster who is also now the president of the United States, and I'm telling you, above and beyond all this nitpicky shit with Comey and the other people being investigated, and I call it nitpicky because in the great scheme of things, we have enormous shit that is going on that Trump is doing. He is deconstructing, as Steve Bannon, the Leninist, said. He's deconstructing the regulatory state. Now, that's supposed to be a bad thing. It isn't. You cannot have the kind of predatory, filthy, degenerate capitalism that has engulfed the United States without having a corresponding hard-ass regulatory situation where there are a number of agencies whose sole function is to knock the shit out of these capitalist pigs when they go too far, which is every day. But while we're over here watching, and it is entertaining, let's be honest about this. It is entertaining in a perverse, sick way to watch this illiterate son of a bitch who is the president of the United States surrounded by gangsters, liars, con artists, grifters, while they steal the country blind, fuck up every relationship we have with our allies. If you don't like our relationship with our allies, you feel it's too centrally based on war and or aggression, okay, I'll go along with that. But this is not the way to remove us from those alignments. What Trump is doing is like, what's the game where you pull the little pieces out, Kathy, and hope shit doesn't collapse?
Jenga.
That's what he's doing, only Trump doesn't give a shit what piece he pulls out. He just reaches and pulls shit out, and it comes collapse. That's what's happening. And again, if our alliances, and 90% of them are sickening to me also, but when this crazy fucker makes nice with medieval kingdom like Saudi Arabia, and then, you know, gives the ass to people like Angela Merkel or the new leader of France or the British prime minister and treats them like they're shit. I think that is a clear indication that he really is out to destroy the United States. Maybe we need destroying. Eh? What do you think? Do we need to be destroyed? Well, tomorrow should be interesting, to say the least. The Dog and Pony Show begins, I guess, what is it, Kathy, about 10 o'clock in the morning, Eastern time? Say again. What? I didn't hear what you said.
I just said that after I'm done eating my children, I'm going to be glued to the television.
Yeah.
Hey, rumor has it, you might take a phone call.
Probably not.
Oh, come on.
Well, this is a podcast.
Well, it's a podcast with phone calls, like most podcasts.
Okay. Well, what's the phone? I don't even know what the number is.
Well, it hasn't changed. It's on the website, and it's 470.
I threw it away because I didn't think we'd ever take phone calls again. All right, wait a minute. Say it again. 470.
470 is the new Atlanta area code, Metro. 545.
Uh-huh.
1950.
Okay.
The year you were born.
Bullshit. I was in college in 1950. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Well, you heard what she said. If you're listening, you want to call in, go ahead. 470-545-1950. Somebody called in already? Oh, Christ. Here we go. Well, let me log into the thingy. All right, who is it, Kathy? You want me to wait? Okay. All right, this is Rick? Rick from L.A.? Didn't I just read his email? Oh, that's nice.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
How are you?
Oh, I'm following the events in Washington. I tell you, I think President Underwood is in charge, you know, House of Cards.
Yeah, it's a real dog and pony show.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
And, yeah.
I mean, this guy is, like, so deep with Russians, you know, Russian influence that, I mean, you know, we might as well start eating borscht every night for dinner, you know, and
yeah.
Drink like our victory vodka instead of our victory gin, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not just him. It's his whole damn family and everybody associated with him. And I think the involvement, there's nothing intriguing about it. I think it all has to do with money, you know, Trump.
It's a huge money laundering, international money laundering conspiracy whereby, you know, Trump's role in it is to allow people to, you know, purchase, you know, real estate in New York or Florida and basically park their money there and then wash it, and then they eventually sell it, and then it goes who knows where, you know?
But I also think that since Trump is a loser of the highest order, he's a billionaire loser, and if we ever saw his tax returns, I think we would see that he was so deeply in debt. And
are you there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Oh, okay. Kathy, don't touch the dials. Thank you. Can you hear me okay, Rick? What I was going to say, when Trump got to the point where he was so deeply in debt that no lending institution or bank in this country would give him a dime, that's when he turned. This is just me talking. This is my theory. He turned to the Russians. And the Russians saw the oligarchs, you know, and probably the Russian intelligence agencies and Putin. I mean, they understand. They knew what Trump was. They knew how easily he was manipulable because he is so insecure and such a loser. So they went along with it. But they own him. They, you know, the Russian intelligence owns his ass. And that's what this is all about. That's why Trump does not want anyone to know. He is a puppet of Vladimir Putin.
Oh, he's totally a puppet. I mean, just the confirmation of that, Mike, is the very day after Trump fired Comey, he had the meeting in the Oval Office with the ambassador from Russia. What is it, Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia?
I believe that's it, yeah.
And all the American reporters were excluded. And we only found out about what was said during that meeting based on the fact that there were some English note takers there. You know,
official
note takers for the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if that doesn't tell you, you know, that this guy is totally owned by, you know, the Russians, nothing will.
Right.
You know, there's going to be, you know, there's like a third of the people who, you know, who voted in the election who are still going to support Trump no matter what, you know. Again, he could shoot people on Fifth Avenue and he wouldn't lose support among those kinds of people.
Yeah, and you know what is really shocking to me, and I'm not easily shocked. Hold on a minute.
Sure.
What is really shocking to me is the fact that I would guess that probably 90% of the people who voted for him are the types of people whose parents and grandparents were told over and over and over again that the Russians and the communists and the Soviets were a direct threat to everything American, and they were brought up that way.
Right.
So here you have people who voted for Trump who, if they're paying any attention, are now finding out that it's starting to leak around the edges that he is probably owned and operated by Putin and these Russian gangsters. And I just wonder how are the people who voted for Trump, these good Republicans, how are they processing that?
Well, they have a lot of cognitive dissonance because, you know, a lot of these folks voted for Trump because, you know, based on his promises to, you know, protect Social Security and the safety net and this, that, and the other thing. And he wasn't going to, you know, he wasn't going to cut that, and he was going to protect them. So, I mean, I think he got a fair number of, you know, people who might ordinarily, you know, vote Democratic, like your working class. He got, like, I think 54% of white women.
Uh-huh. Which is
vote for him.
That's astonishing.
Despite his pussy grabbing comments, you know.
Plus 85 or it's a high 80s percentage of Christian evangelicals. It's just stunning to me the people who voted for him. I can't.
Yeah. Well, I think their issue, Mike, was probably to try to get abortion banned by the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think also the reason the Republicans are not doing anything to rein this guy in, they know he's nuts, but they also know that if they get the legislation together, the bills together, and send it to him, he will sign this crap into law.
Right.
And that's all they care about. They don't give a damn. You know, Trump could fall off his Trump Tower tomorrow, and they wouldn't give a shit.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Trump, if his popularity drops down into the maybe the low 20s,
uh-huh.
Then you might have some calls from some Republicans like, hey, you know, you got to resign, dude. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the best outcome for the Dems, Mike, would be for the Democrats to win the midterm elections.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to necessarily impeach Trump because the Senate would not convict him. There's not going to be enough votes, the 2/3, to convict Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And then he could come out of there, you know, after he's acquitted, very strong like Clinton was after his attempted removal, which failed.
Yeah, I don't.
So what you do is you force Trump to resign.
Right.
And then you can bring criminal charges against him, and then Pence will be forced to, you know, pardon him. And then that will basically kill Pence's chances, hopefully, of ever getting elected president, just like Gerald Ford probably lost to Carter due to pardoning Nixon.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's the best case scenario for the Dems, Mike. I mean, I think we need to, you know, they need to learn to like Donald, the Republicans, even if he's, you know, he's dragging them down the sewer with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, you know, the outcome of this. Of this whole mess is just it's beyond my ability to even guess what's going to happen, but it doesn't look good, does it, Rick?
No, it certainly doesn't look good, and I mean, it was a huge FU to the American people getting this guy as president, you know?
Yeah, it certainly was.
Again, Americans, I mean, you know, we make bad choices every 20 years or so, you know, Nixon,
mm-hmm.
Not even 20 years, Nixon, Reagan,
mm-hmm.
Bush too, you know.
And now this clown.
And now Trump.
Yeah, yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah. All right, Mike, well, you keep up the great work, okay?
All right, Rick, thanks for calling in. I appreciate your comments. You take care.
You bet. Glad you took the call. Thanks for taking it. Take care, man.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Now, other than the fact that it blew out my eardrums there when you turned something up, I guess that worked okay. I don't know if the first part of that conversation people could hear, but after you adjusted the sound up a bit, yeah.
Yeah, well, everything has its time. And
what? Sounds like something the birds said.
to everything. Well, I just I was just going to comment that, you know, it's a new system, and it's in beta testing or something, and
uh-huh.
So you know, we'll keep on and see if the next person can just speak a little louder. Would you like to take another call?
In a minute.
Okay.
In a minute.
I'll let him know.
Okay. You know, the other thing that. The other thing that occurred today, and it was timed perfectly by the orange bastard, you know, when this Senate Intelligence Committee hearing today was allegedly about this weird CIA term that none of us really give a shit about, but we're surprised to hear it, unmasking, and about the FISA court and all this crazy, crazy stuff that's going on. But the Democrats, of course, took the opportunity. You had four, I think the four, was it four? Yeah, four members or three members, I don't know, leaders of the Intelligence Committee. I'm sorry, leaders of the intelligence apparatus in this country. And to watch people like, who was Angus, what's his name, the independent senator, Angus... damn it. But when I have to, Senator Angus, I'm going to have to use it. When he told Admiral, what's his name? Why don't I have this shit written down?
You're batting 1,000 here.
You're supposed to write
Admiral,
this down.
What's his name?
Mike Rogers.
Mike Rogers.
Yeah, I couldn't think of his name.
Angus, that guy. I thought Lincoln Chafee was an independent.
No, Bernie Sanders is. Lincoln Chafee. He hasn't been in the Senate for I don't know how long.
Well, see, I need to, you know, watch more C-SPAN.
Yeah. Anyway, when he went after Admiral Rogers, when the independent senator, Angus Blank, I thought that was great theater. And to watch someone who I think Mike Rogers was in charge of the 8th Fleet or the 7th Fleet at one time. And to see these people sitting there, these intelligence people sitting there, knowing that what they're saying is, whether it's their intent or not, is immaterial. But the result of what they're doing shields and protects the worst gangster this country has ever seen in the Oval Office. And I just wonder how somebody like Mike Rogers, who has an honorable career. I don't know that much about him, but I'm certainly not pro-military. My understanding is he served his country, whatever the hell that means now. And he's still active duty, isn't he?
I have no idea.
I don't. He showed up in his uniform with all the colors on his chest. But Angus King, that's who it is, just popped into my punkin' little head. When Senator Angus King, well, now I don't know. Anyway, his questioning. I liked it when he said, or one of these senators, Democrats, said, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, we're not here to hear about what you feel. You know, these guys kept saying, I don't feel it's within my whatever to answer your question. You know, and I was waiting for Angus King to say, let me tell you what you do with your feelings. Check them out at the door. When you come into this hearing room, we want to know, is there an issue here that should be brought to the attention of this committee and the American public? It's not about your feelings, Admiral, which I thought was a perfect rejoinder to all the bullshit that was erupting from that witness table and from the Republicans on the committee. Somebody else call in?
Yeah.
Somebody waiting? Oh, my God, this is like talk radio again. Oh, Christ, spare me. I'm just kidding. If you want to call in, call in. George in Corscold. Oh, our friend George in Corscold, California. Hey, George.
Hey, Mike. It's good to hear you again.
Yeah, well.
Talk to you again.
Welcome to the phone.
I want to say something in all sincerity that I don't think is ever said in sincerity. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's been a while.
It has indeed.
I hope the family's well and that you are all prosperous indeed.
Well, not the prosperous part, but we had a great time climbing up Pike's Peak. That was a rush.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What a bunch of adventurers you are.
Well, we drove up. We only climbed the last couple hundred feet, but... at 14,100 feet. It's the tallest peak in the United States. Certainly not North America, but it was a real rush. And not one of the three of us fell off and died. That's pretty cool.
But that'll take your breath away hiking at that.
Absolutely takes your breath away. It's hard to breathe. Anyway.
I haven't been following the hearings that closely, but I've been kind of keeping up on it. And it seems to me that this Rogers fellow, the admiral, 2 weeks after the election, he went and met with Trump. And apparently he did it incognito in some sort of disguise or something, because everybody was going through the lobby of the Trump Tower. And... he didn't even inform his commander-in-chief that he was going to do this or that he did it. He kept a secret from the commander-in-chief.
Well, no, wait a second. Who does Admiral Mike Rogers, I mean, he is the commander. The only commander above him would be the president.
Exactly. And he didn't tell Barack Obama. This would be in November.
I see what you're saying. This is when, you're right. This is when Obama was still president. Excuse me. Okay.
And... he's still covering his ass wherever he goes. He's still a serving general officer in the United States military, and he's running some sort of game with Donald Trump.
That's what it seems like.
How do we get Mike, don't they understand how this goes, seeps down into the command structure, all the way to the enlisted man? When your leaders are crooked, it makes me sick. And I didn't even serve in the military, but I respect the institutions.
Yeah, it is pretty disgusting, and I'm sure people in uniform, if they're thinking at all, let's keep in mind that one of the functions of military training is to take away your ability to make independent decisions. But having said that, I would imagine that so many people in the military, especially when you get up into the officer's rank, are looking at this guy, Trump, with just dumbstruck, like trying to figure out what the hell is going on here.
Every one of these guys you see on TV have sworn to uphold, defend, protect the Constitution. And these guys are lying about that they violated that.
Mm-hmm.
And the Congress is going to let them get away with it because it's all Republican.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have no laws. It used to be we were a nation of laws, no more.
That is so true. That is so true, George. Jesus. All right, George, thanks. Maybe we'll talk
good
again.
Good talking to you.
All right, good talking to you, too. If this system holds up for any length of time, maybe we can take calls once in a while. It's weird to be taking phone calls again. Jesus, God.
Everything old is new again, or something. Do you want to tell people also that we have Hernan back, the Hernan.
Where did Hernan go?
Hernan had been two things. He was on vacation, and then he got sick, very sick. And we probably should have given him a shout out on the air, but he had a horrible virus that I guess was like the flu. And so he wasn't able to post videos.
No,
this is our YouTube editor
in chief.
So if you go to MikeMalloy.com and you click on, well, it's the main page, the YouTube page there. So you'll have fresh videos from Hernan. There hadn't been any for a couple of weeks because, well, he was gone and then he was sick. Mm-hmm. But he's back and he's healthy.
Oh, good.
So we're glad to hear that. So we have the return of the phone calls and we have the return.
More or less.
Well, come on. I thought that was pretty good.
Well, no, I don't have any complaint about the two guys who have called in. I never thought I would be doing taking phone calls again.
Oh well,
you know, just kind of.
It is still a talk show. You can't talk, you know.
Well,
forever. You've got to have some callers.
That's true. All right, thank you, Kathy. I'm glad that
I know there was something else I was going to say.
I'm glad that Hernan Schulein is back. He is our Argentinian. He lives in Argentina.
He lives in Argentina with his beautiful family.
Right.
And also, did you thank Bob? Was I busy?
You were busy.
I was busy. Well,
I thanked
Bob.
Him profusely for running the show while we were gone.
Okay.
Absolutely. Getting away from Trump for just a second, you know, you've heard me talk over the past couple of years about this psycho who is the governor of Kansas, the Republican Sam Brownback, and how as soon as he got into office, he slashed and burned the tax structure in Kansas, reduced all taxes everywhere, especially on corporations, practically to zero. But in that process, he destroyed the infrastructure. By that, I mean education and arts and so on and so forth in Kansas. His idea was, and it's a bullshit idea. I don't know how many times these guys have to keep reinventing a wheel that has four sides to it. You know, the goddamn thing won't roll, Sam. You know, Reagan found that out. But no, you Republican jackasses have to keep doing it. So the corporations that were supposed to be attracted to Kansas by the deep tax cuts hesitated and then said, no, don't think so. Because they could see what was happening in the state. Well, after 5 years of this bullshit, believe it or not, a coalition in that state made up of conservatives, moderate Republicans, and Democrats finally came together And according to Salon, delivered the major death blow to Brownback's failed supply-side economics experiment. How did they do it? These legislators just voted for the largest tax increase in the history of the state of Kansas in an attempt to repair the incredible damage that this rat bastard had perpetrated against the people in that state. Now, Brownback had vetoed an earlier effort to overturn, I think we mentioned it in one of these podcasts, to overturn his failed tax reform experiment. But that proved impotent after the lawmakers immediately voted to override his veto, and this happened last night. The Senate voted 27-13, the Senate in Kansas, and the State House voted 88-31 to override Brownback's veto. That's according to the Kansas City Star newspaper. Now, both the chambers in Congress—I'm sorry—in Kansas are led by Republicans, and the legislature had already voted to end Kansas' failed trickle-down economics experiment back in February, but the Senate had been unable to get enough votes to override Brownback's veto. But this time, supporters of the bill to raise taxes had four votes more than the two-thirds majority needed to override this asshole's veto. And the Kansas City Star reported it this way, quote, a major vote in the House came from the leading Republican in that chamber, House Speaker Ron Rickman, an Olathe Republican, that's a town, Olathe, near Kansas City, resisted tax increases for much of the 2017 session. But last night, Rickman voted to override the governor's veto. He had not voted for the tax plan when it passed the House Monday night. Immediately after the House adjourned, the House Speaker, Rickman, rushed to his office, shut the door, and didn't answer a question about his vote. Cowardly little prick. I mean, even when the state is going down the tubes, these Republican cowards who finally, after 5 years, realize that their state is going to have to declare bankruptcy, the education system is falling apart, public health in the state is falling apart, infrastructure is just a word in the dictionary right now in Kansas. Everything is going to hell because of what Brownback did. Look, you dumb shit Republicans, let me clue you in, you halfwits. It takes money to run a municipality or a state or a country. And how do you get the money, you dumb shits? You have to tax people. We all have to contribute. And that contribution is called a tax, you dumb shits. Now there's taxes on individuals, on corporations, on LLCs, on companies, on this and that and the other thing. And if you think you can run your tacky ass goddamn state on no money, take a look around at what you've done. I mean, how stupid. Jared Kushner was right when he said, oh, Trump's going to keep talking about the birther bullshit because Republicans are so stupid, they'll believe it. Yeah. Now, some background. After Brownback took office in 2011, he and the other Republican swine in that state joined forces to cut the state's already low tax rates even further. And according to Salon, Brownback pursued even more aggressive reforms in the following years, completely eliminating the state income tax for owner-operated businesses. He promised at the time that his so-called experiment that he was perpetrating against the people of Kansas would, his words, quote, act like a shot of adrenaline into the heart of the Kansas economy, end quote. It's more like an air bubble injected into one of the goddamn arteries, you freak. So in the meantime, the Kansas economy tanked. So since this right-wing asshole became governor, the growth rate in Kansas has been way below that of the Midwest region and the nation every single year. Kansas now faces projected budget shortfalls nearing $1 billion through 2019. Now, states can't run, they can't do deficit spending. The feds can, but the states can't do it. So more cuts are going to have to come in order, along with the tax increases, to make up for what this evil son of a bitch has done. Brownback, Salon reports, and his fellow Republicans' tax reform failed so catastrophically that even other Republican lawmakers from the region have openly mocked it. Missouri Republican, right next door, State Senator Ryan Silvey mocked Brownback's claim that cutting taxes in Kansas would result in businesses from neighboring states just rushing in. And the Missouri guy said that the real joke is that Kansas's failed tax experiment was crafted and endorsed by the most influential conservatives in the country and closely mirrors President Trump's tax reform plan. In fact, both plans were designed by the same right-wing assholes. So now, as the orange bastard in the White House attempts to pass the same failed plan through a Republican-controlled Congress, Republicans in Kansas are finally willing to admit that the whole thing is a goddamn painful, miserable joke. And in order to correct it, they had to pass the largest tax increase in Kansas history. And they need to fund now a public education system that the Kansas Supreme Court recently ruled is in violation of the Kansas Constitution. These Republican fucks, they don't care who they hurt or the degree to which the pain is administered. They don't care. The only thing that they have are their goddamn red pencils to cut here and cut there, and then they rush to their little churches and bullshit with their Bibles on Sunday and say, "Oh, Jesus, I am doing such a good job. Aren't I God? God and Jesus have to be tax-cutting Republicans, right, Reverend?" What a bunch of assholes. But if you think these devils in the U.S. Congress, these Republicans led by this dumb shit Paul Ryan, have taken a look at what happened in Kansas and what happened last night overriding Brownback's veto, this crazy bastard Brownback, even as the state is going down the toilet, he vetoes legislation that would try to pull them up out of the muck to the point that the Congress had to override his veto. But if you think these half-wits in the U.S. Congress are paying attention to this, if you think that the Republicans in Washington have learned something from this, I'd like to know what you've been drinking. They don't give a shit. Never have. Never will. Even when they have a perfect example, if that's the right phrase, in Kansas. We'll be back momentarily.
Spent the last year, Rocky Mountain.
Mike.
We're here at the White House, where the president has just announced he is leaving the Paris Climate Agreement. Mr. President, we heard several of your staff had advised you not leave the agreement. What did you say to them? Where is it you have your cabinet meeting?
In the White Room.
We understand Ivanka tried to explain climate change to you. What did she do?
She blinded me with science.
Mr. President, what past experience do you have with the environment?
Paradise.
We're talking now with a climate scientist. Sir, how would you assess the current climate situation?
All things ain't what they used to be.
Mr. President, you just returned from a trip to Europe where Melania famously would not hold your hand. What did she say to you?
She said, don't give me no lines and keep your hands to yourself.
When you met with the Israelis, what did they say they wanted you to be doing?
Keeping all my secrets safe tonight.
In Rome, when you met the Pope, what did you think he thought of you?
God only knows what.
Mr. President, where would you say you get most of your inspiration?
Back in the USSR.
The last time you were in Moscow, what did you say then? We're speaking with newly elected Montana Congressman Greg Gianforte. Before you came to Washington, what was happening in your district?
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
Now let's speak with Sean Spicer. What did you say at your first White House press briefing?
I am your substitute teacher, Sister Mary Elephant.
How would you say the last 6 months have gone?
I remember when I lost my mind.
We're speaking with Michael Flynn. What is your background?
I'm a spy.
And what would your critics say you are?
A traitor.
We're speaking again with the president. Sir, what is the worst thing you've ever done?
I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
And if you are impeached, what will you tell the Congress?
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
We're speaking with former FBI director James Comey. Sir, what is your background?
Daddy was a cop on the east side of Chicago.
And now to Kellyanne Conway. Kellyanne, what do you spend most of your time doing?
Living in a world of
Mr. President, do you have any parting advice?
Shower the people you love.
That was kind of stupid. Who put that together? Jesus.
I take no responsibility for that one, folks.
Yeah, okay. You know, speaking of the collapsing infrastructure in Kansas and how that was brought about by the governor, the collapsing infrastructure in this country has been brought about by a lack of leadership in the U.S. House of Representatives for God knows how long. And I really don't care what party was in control. According to the this professional organization, American Society of Structural Engineers, or something along those lines, it's not going to take $1 trillion to bring U.S. infrastructure up to engineering standards. It's going to take $7 or $8 trillion. And the orange asshole was in Ohio today with one of his phony-ass little speeches. And apparently part of it was about infrastructure. You know, I was watching the hearing with our crack intelligence agency heads being questioned by Democrats. Republicans weren't questioning where the shit. And MSNBC, which is the station I watch primarily, although I'm starting to drift back to CNN, for the very simple fact that in the middle of the questioning, MSNBC for some reason felt it necessary to show Air Force One landing. And then to cut away to let the American people who watch MSNBC hear some of this bullshit speech that this freak makes. Now, they didn't stay with it very long because they realized that CNN, I think they realized, MSNBC realized that CNN was staying with the hearing. This is where part of the problem comes in as far as I'm concerned. As long as the cable networks, with the exception of Fox, screw Fox, but as the cable networks and the over-the-air broadcast networks, as long as they continue to provide a forum for this psycho son of a bitch, every time they put him on camera, I know what they're probably thinking. Well, he makes such bullshit nonsense that people will be able to see it and hear it and realize that the guy's out of control, out of his mind. not true, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, and NBC. You're dealing with Americans. And as your Betty Malloy here has said over and over and over again, we are the stupidest group of voters ever assembled anywhere. We don't vote our own self-interest. We vote political bullshit. If we voted our own self-interest, economic, financial, whatever, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in right now, where it concerns, I'm just focusing on infrastructure. And the only one who's made any sense about this in recent years has been Bernie Sanders. So there's Trump today in Ohio, just dribbling lies and deceptions and his hyperbolic crapola all over the place. Alternet puts it this way. President Trump's original proposal for a $1 trillion infrastructure and jobs plan was, in principle, a worthy idea, a practical way to create jobs and improve the country's highways, bridges, railways, airports. In reality, Trump's jobs agenda is a sham. It doesn't involve $1 trillion. It won't do very much for the country, a country's infrastructure, and it's not going to create very many well-paying jobs. It's just more bullshit. Now, this was obvious Monday, 2 days ago. We were still in Denver, and I was watching the news, and I heard this shit come on about the Trump, the first installment of what this moron is calling Infrastructure Week. It was a televised event designed to look like a signing ceremony. And in front of the cameras, the orange asshole made a little tiny proposal calling on Congress to split air traffic control away from the Federal Aviation Administration and place it under a private non-government entity, a goddamn corporation. So Trump sat there and he made this big ass show, this idiotic moron made a show of signing two documents as if they were legislative bills or executive orders. And as Alternate points out, in fact, they were merely statements of, quote, legislative principles, which is bullshit. It doesn't mean anything. Trump's infrastructure lies beginning to take the form of your typical bait and switch scam, like the one Trump projected in selling Trump University to unsuspecting, gullible consumers. See, and I'm right back at that point again. Knowing what everybody knew, that Trump was a con artist and a liar and took advantage of people who could least deal with being taken advantage of. What made these good and true Republicans vote for this asshole? As far as bait and switch, the bait was a $1 trillion figure. Ooh, I'll say $1 trillion. That'll get the yahoos all worked up. Trump suggested that would launch a massive effort that could have real stimulating effect on our economy, which is around $13, $14, $15 trillion a year. That was the bait. The switch of the bait and switch is found in a fact sheet distributed by the White House. Trump's 2018 budget involved the expenditure of no more than $200 billion toward the goal of infrastructure jobs, 20% of what the orange gangster had promised, right? The bait was that his plan, Trump's plan, would be new. The switch is he wants to privatize everything. Now, it just so happens that Democrats as well as Republicans are opposed to this. The bait promised by Trump is where it concerns air traffic control, selling it off, or getting rid of it, turning over to these private assholes, Trump said that the air traffic controllers would provide cheaper, faster, and safer travel. What the fuck is he talking about? How could replacing I just don't know how to how could replacing the air traffic controllers, doesn't this have a familiar ring, those of you who are old enough to remember what Reagan did to the ATC union? Remember that? You don't? Then look it up. But what, I mean, what possible way would splitting air traffic controllers away from the FAA and put it in the hands of some greedy, nasty, stinking Republican corporate capitalist, how's that going to make things where it concerns air traffic cheaper? How's it going to make it faster? How in the hell is it going to make it safer? Are you shitting me? Private corporations running air traffic control? Private corporations are in business to make money, right? If you're running the air traffic control system and you're not making enough money, well, here's an idea. You let people go. Remember, capitalists hate dealing with workers. They hate it because it's an expense. It's something they don't want to pay. So they let a few air traffic controllers go. That makes air travel safer? Well, that was the bait, the switch, which Trump didn't bring up at this phony-ass signing thing the other day. The switch is that Trump's 2018 budget seeks to cut $175 million from a program called the Essential Air Services Program that subsidizes air travel to remote areas so that all regions of the country are guaranteed air access, even Hawaii and Alaska. And if this is approved, and I don't think it will be, I don't think the senators from Hawaii or Alaska or even the House members are going to go along with this shit, but if it were approved, Trump's proposal here, now remember, this is infrastructure. His proposal would actually dismantle the one feature of the current air travel infrastructure that serves rural Americans and people who live in isolated areas. I'm telling you, it just staggers me that people actually voted for this guy. And now I keep hearing this statistic. The polls keep rolling in about his popularity or this or that. But among Republicans, his popularity stays at 80%. Well, people who voted for him stays at 80%. That speaks volumes about the mental capacity of people who voted for him. Unbelievable. So Trump's air traffic privatization scheme is not the least bit concerned with creating jobs. It's more about selling the idea of a private, what is being called public-private partnership. Anytime somebody says that, grab your wallet and fucking run. Get away from them. Public-private partnership? It's either one or the other. It can't be both. And work efficiently. But he says that's the way to build the country's infrastructure. Now, as Alternet puts it, quote, while there is no specific proposal for how these partnerships will work or what they will build, the New York Times notes that the Trump approach calls on, states, cities, and corporations to shoulder most of the cost of rebuilding roads, bridges, railways, and waterways. End quote. States, cities, and corporations? Why not do it the way it is supposed to be done? Through our tax dollars. Why not take half the defense budget each year for the next 10 years, the next 15 years, and there's all the money you could possibly need for infrastructure. Oh, Malloy, but Jesus Christ, what about the Russians? Huh? Oh, okay, what about the crazed Muslims? Huh? What about... screw it. Now, these public-private partnerships have already been rejected in, guess where? Texas. Texas, of all places. With the exception of Austin, probably the reddest state in America. And even they said, nah, don't think so. A couple of weeks ago, Bloomberg News reported that the Republican-controlled Texas House had voted to reject a bill that would have allowed the partnerships, quote, to participate in 18 state highway projects costing as much as $30 billion. The legislators in Texas acted that way because of public opposition to the highway tolls that the public-private partnership would impose. Of course, you know, an effort to sell off the interstate highway system has been going on for what? Since Reagan. And in some little slices of the country, it's worked. You'll have an interstate highway, sections of which, not big sections, but sections of which will be a toll road. I bet Eisenhower is just turning in his goddamn grave. This was his idea, you know. He's the one that got this through the Congress. Why? How? What prompted him? Because Eisenhower saw the Autobahn in Germany and saw how efficiently people could move, traffic could move, and let's face it, in Eisenhower's case, how military equipment could move. Das Autobahn. So Trump wants to turn over the highway infrastructure problems to corporations that will then turn them into toll roads. And where will the toll money go? Will it go into the city or state coffers? Or will it go someplace else? Will it go to the federal government? Where do you think it would go? Right. Into the pockets of the greedy, predatory capitalist bastards who put the scheme together. Bloomberg News noted when they reported on Texas legislature rejecting this bullshit, Bloomberg put it this way, quote, the defeat leaves the second most populous U.S. state unable to tap into the partnerships to finance the infrastructure improvements, even as Trump is proposing to expand these public-private partnerships, end quote. So to put it bluntly, the orange bastard's so-called infrastructure plan has absolutely no resemblance to a serious infrastructure jobs proposal. And as alternate reports, listen to this, it ignores the proposal made last week by the AFL-CIO. It ignores the list of needed infrastructure projects cited by the American Society of Civil Engineers, which says that, quote, Dedicated public funding sources on the local, state, and federal levels need to be consistently and sufficiently funded from user-generated fees. Trump's proposal has nothing in common with the Senate Democrats' blueprint to rebuild America's infrastructure announced last year, or with Michael Bloomberg's Building America's Future program, which has the support of dozens of current and former local officials from both parties. Now, the sorts of programs that Bloomberg is talking about and local governments have proposed could create up to 11 million jobs, with 55% of them going to high school graduates and high school dropouts. That's according to Georgetown University's study released earlier this year. In other words, it would especially benefit, quote, men in blue-collar occupations who have been left behind due to economic changes over the past several decades, end quote. Now, those are the programs, not the one proposed by this asshole in this orange monster in the White House, but proposals made by the Senate Democrats' blueprint to rebuild America's infrastructure, Michael Bloomberg's Building America's Future, ideas from the AFL-CIO, targeted projects put out there by the American Society of Civil Engineers. Oh, no. Nah. Now, according to Alternate, after the election, Steve Bannon, that lumpy son of a bitch, hyped Trump's plan as the key to the realignment of American politics. You see, it's not about jobs. It's not about helping by providing gainful employment to the poor, miserable suckers who voted for this asshole. It's not about any of that. It's not about that. It's about American politics. Bannon said, quote, I'm the guy pushing a $1 trillion infrastructure plan. With negative interest rates throughout the world, it's the greatest opportunity to rebuild everything. Shipyards, ironworks, get them all jacked up. We're just going to throw it up against the wall and see if it sticks. It will be as exciting as the 1930s, greater than the Reagan Revolution. Conservatives plus populists in an economic nationalist movement, end quote. Jesus H. Christ. This guy's sicker than Trump. Look, I think I think there's a simple solution here. Just like there's a simple solution, there really is a simple solution to providing health insurance to every single American from birth until death. Very simple. It just requires blowing up the health insurance industry that does nothing but fuck over people who have legitimate claims or deny insurance coverage to people who have a legitimate reason for wanting it. And that is single payer. Get rid of these goddamn monsters and predators who run into the ground our healthcare system. Well, the same thing is true with infrastructure. A leadership team that is really concerned about our crumbling infrastructure, and it is crumbling. I mean, you know, that's not hyperbole. That's not an exaggeration. It is crumbling because it has been ignored for so long. But if you really want to improve it, I think it would be fairly simple. This is how President Malloy, now King Malloy, this is what I would do. Immediately impose, until the money was raised, a 50-cent, that's right, 50-cent a gallon gasoline tax. There's your money. And that's just for the roads and bridges There are other ways, other ways to raise money for the rest of it. But a 50 cent a gallon, ooh, 50, Jesus Christ, Malloy. Look, gasoline right now in most parts of the country, at least where I've been, is roughly $2.30, $2.40 a gallon. A 50 cent tax would still keep it under $3 a gallon. Now, that might have a net effect of causing people to drive less, which we should all applaud because there'd be less bullshit, garbage, poison, death going into the atmosphere. But it would still generate an enormous amount of tax revenue to use on these infrastructure programs. And then if the Congress ever woke up out of their goddamn right-wing coma, very simple, and it's a very capitalist idea. The Congress could authorize the sale of bonds, infrastructure bonds, 30-year bonds. Or, if they don't want to do that, just goddamn borrow the money. Borrow it from the Federal Reserve. Here's $1 trillion. How much interest do I have to pay? 3%. Woo! Now, I know my simplistic ideas are just, you know, out in the ozone somewhere, right? Yeah. Anyway, 6 months after Bannon put this bullshit out, his fantasy was exposed as what it was. A bullshit fantasy. There is no plan to, quote, rebuild everything, end quote. There is no proposal designed to benefit lower-skilled workers or improve America's public works. There's nothing. What Trump has come up with is this dirty, filthy little scheme to turn over public infrastructure projects and consequently the assets to be repaired to private interests, which would be able then to extract profits under the flimsiest of supervision. Who's going to watch them? Who's going to make sure that it's not a great big ripoff? God damn. So as Alternet puts it, if you liked Trump University, you're going to love Trump's infrastructure jobs plan. I heard him today. Oh, you know, I love our workers. I love our workers. Such a condescending goddamn attitude. And there were only a couple hundred people at this rally, and it's my understanding it was all by invitation. We're going to make the air the cleanest air on earth. We're going to make the water pure and beautiful. He stands up there and says his shit. And the people clap and applaud. And there's not a gram of truth to anything this rat fucker says. Nothing. Not a bit. And then through his lying orange mouth, he starts to, yeah, the workers, yeah, everybody's going to have a job. Man, we're just getting, now he's in Ohio saying this shit. I think he was in southern Ohio where the mines have closed and not because of Obama's regulations, Jesus H. Christ, but because capitalism says, wait a second, what are we doing with this coal mining bullshit when fracking and natural gas is cheaper to get and we'll make great profit? Obama's regulations. You lying son of a bitch, Trump. You'll lie about everything, won't you? But there he is in Ohio. In a part of Ohio that desperately needs jobs, talking about jobs, when it's all bullshit. It's all smoke. There's no there. Nothing. And yet the people sit there and clap and applaud when he comes across with this condescending bullshit. Oh, we love our workers. I love them. I love them all. I love every one of them. I love all the workers. Are you a worker? Oh, I love you. I love all the workers. Workers get my love. I love workers. We love our workers. I've asked this over and over again, but I'll ask it one more time. How much longer can this shit go on before everybody says enough. Enough. There's more that this crazy son of a bitch is doing. I don't know if I have time to get to it tonight, but the way he has applauded Saudi Arabia for putting together an Arab coalition to punish Bahrain, or is it Bahrain? Or is it the, I guess it, what is it? Wait a second. Where's the damn story? Qatar, I'm sorry. The Saudis are trying, and they're probably going to be effective. They've put together five or six other Arab states to isolate Qatar. Or as I used to call it, Qatar. So Trump takes credit for prompting the Saudis to make this move against Qatar. But the problem here is Qatar is a U.S. military partner. We have a goddamn base there. Now, I know we shouldn't have one there. What the hell are we doing in Qatar? It's because of U.S. imperialism and bullshit. I get that. But it's arguably the U.S. most important military outpost in the Middle East. Okay, shut the goddamn thing down. You won't get any argument from me. My point is, though, that you feel like an asshole talking about it. This is what he did with NATO. This is what he did with military partners, economic partners in Europe. He demeans them. Officials in Jordan said yesterday that that country would downgrade its diplomatic relations with Qatar and revoke the license of the Doha-based television channel Al Jazeera. That's just part of it. Jesus Christ. Now, Qatar, this shows the insane relationships that we have with various countries. Qatar, where we have this massive military base, it has long been accused, I don't know by who, of funneling money to the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood, in case you don't know, has forsworn violence. It's still accused of terrorism by some countries, and that's usually countries who don't want to see the Muslim Brotherhood get into any position of political power. So you label people terrorists now. That's all you have to do. You're a terrorist. Huh? You're a terrorist! Not just the Muslim Brotherhood, but Qatar has been accused of funneling money to radical groups in Syria, Libya, other Arab nations. But, and this is where the insanity of U.S. foreign policy really comes in. Qatar is also home to two, count them, two, I said one, two major American command posts, including a $60 million center from which the United States and its allies conduct their air war on Islamic State militants in Iraq and Syria. In a tweet, I guess it was yesterday, this asshole wrote, quote, "During my recent trip to the Middle East, I stated that there can no longer be funding of radical ideology. Leaders pointed to Qatar. Look! Radical ideology? Doesn't 99% of it come from Saudi Arabia, from the Wahhabists? From the head removers, from the government that will execute or flog a woman for driving a car? What the fuck is Trump talking about? He is such a stupid man. If there is one country in the Middle East that exports terrorism to the degree that Saudi Arabia does with its ridiculous, goddamn insane religious fanaticism, please tell me who it is. Listen to this. This is from, New York Times. Qatar has long been accused of funneling money to the Muslim Brotherhood, blah, blah, blah. It's home to two American command posts, blah, blah, blah. Those contradictory roles may explain the mixed signals the administration sent after Saudi Arabia's unexpected move. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Defense Secretary Jim Mattis initially tried on Monday to smooth over the rift, with Mr. Tillerson offering to play peacemaker, and Mr. Mattis insisting it would have no effect on the campaign against the Islamic State. Less than 12 hours later, however, Trump discarded that approach by putting his thumb on the scale firmly in Saudi Arabia's favor. His tweets, which a senior White House official said were not a result of any political deliberation, of course not, sowed confusion about America's strategy and its intentions toward a key military partner, Qatar. Trump tweeted, quote, "So good to see the Saudi Arabia visit with the king in 50 countries already paying off. They said they would take a hard line on funding. Perhaps this will be the beginning of the end to the horror of terrorism," end quote. Oh, my God. This is madness. This is complete madness. There are some people now in positions of in military positions, as well as people who are just political observers or commentators or columnists. The question is being asked now: is Trump trying to provoke a domestic terror attack here? Newsweek puts it this way: President Donald Trump's response to the terrorist attacks on London Bridge has prompted an MSNBC commentator to question whether Trump is intending to provoke a similar attack in the U.S. Trump took to Twitter in the wake of Saturday night's attack on London, in which 7 people were killed and a further 48 injured, and he made comments about gun control that prompted a backlash on social media. Trump wrote, quote, "Do you notice we were not having a gun debate right now? That's because they used knives and a truck," end quote. So on MSNBC on Sunday, anchor Thomas Roberts questioned whether the president was attempting to provoke a terror attack with his Twitter rant. This was when Thomas Roberts was interviewing the mayor of Atlanta here, Kasim Reed. Roberts said, more or less to Kasim Reed, quote, "Let's not be politically correct about this. Is the president trying to provoke a domestic terror attack with his Twitter rant because, well, only to prove he is right?" Now, Kasim Reed opted not to answer the question directly, although he did later speak about the use of Twitter as inappropriate in the aftermath of such an attack. Roberts repeated his suggestion that Trump was politicizing the incident, asking former Democratic National Committee Chairman Howard Dean, Roberts did, quote, "I asked this of Mayor Reed, but it seems like the president is trying to provoke something that he can politicize more for his own gain in America. Do you feel that way?" Former President Obama's speechwriter John Favreau also questioned Trump's stream of tweets in the wake of the attack. Favreau wrote, quote, "It's hard to read Trump's tweets this morning and not think that we're one domestic attack away from the most dangerous version of this guy." Ooh. Mm. And one thing that Trump just can't abide is the fact that the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. Well, let's just say he's not a Presbyterian. Christ. All right. No way to get into any other topic. We only have about 35 seconds left.
You want to take another call?
Not right now. No, stop it.
Only kidding. I'm just happy the phones are working.
In a manner of speaking, we'll hear from the podcast subscribers, I'm sure, tomorrow whether or not they could hear that phone call. I hope so. I like hearing from, who was it, Rick and George?
And Rick in L.A. and George from Coarse Gold.
Coarse Gold, California.
Lord knows who might pop up next.
All right. It's time for me to go do my sleeping medication. Here, try some
of
this.
Hey, they didn't let you bring that back from Colorado. Come on.
No, I have my own. All right, I'll see you next time. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malone.